16. Again, do pray for the conference that will be starting Friday evening, where Brother Minnie, pastors, Charlie and I will be leaving out Friday morning. I preach Saturday. Appreciate your prayers. I'd like to read tonight a passage we preached from many times, verses 13 through verse 24. Matthew 16, verses 13 through verse 24. When Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" And they said, "Some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, others Jeremias, or one of the prophets." He saith unto them, "But whom say ye that I am?" And Simon Peter answered and said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus answered and said unto him, "Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say also unto thee, that thou art Peter. Upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatsoever thou shalt bind in earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose in earth shall be loosed in heaven." Then charged he his disciples that they should tell no man that he was Jesus the Christ. From that time forth began Jesus to show his disciples how that he must go into Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed and be raised again the third day. Then Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, "Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee." But he turned and said unto Peter, "Get thee behind me, Satan, thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men." Then said Jesus unto his disciples, "If any man will come after me, let him deny himself, and take up his cross, and follow me." We see that what took place here is in the coasts of Caesarea Philippi, there in verse 13. And it involved, what took place here involves Jesus and his disciples. We see that phrase, his disciples, three times. We see it in verse 13. We see it again in verse 21. See it again in verse 24. Now it is important to remember that as disciples, they had openly and outwardly confessed Christ. They were outwardly living for Christ, and they were outwardly engaged in working for Christ. So, in this passage, Jesus is speaking to his disciples. Though, at one time in the discourse, he speaks directly to Peter. When he did so, it was still in the hearing of the disciples and still for their benefit. Everything leads up to the final two words of verse 24. Follow me. Everything is moving in that direction. Follow me is the end result of what is before us here in this passage. Those two words, follow me, is a summary of the Christian life. One cannot be a Christian without following Christ. Again, there's a difference between a saved person and a Christian. Not all saved people are Christians. Not all saved people follow Jesus Christ. A Christian is a follower of Jesus Christ. It is a lifestyle. And everything is leading up to these two words, follow me. Again, that is a way of life. It is living life serving Him. It is living life separated unto Him. It is living life with Christ having the preeminence. It is living life with Christ having the priority and with Christ being the emphasis of our life. It is living life with Christ as the focal point and the dominating factor, the object and center of everything that we do. This is what it means to follow Jesus Christ. And again, everything in this passage is leading to that. It is living life with Jesus Christ as our purpose, our goal, and our passion. It is living life imitating Jesus Christ. It is living life conforming to the image of Jesus Christ, fully committed to Him, leaning upon Him, depending upon Him, being identified with Him, and of course, experiencing Him. This is, again, just a summary of the Christian life in those two words, follow me. It is having our lives shaped by Christ. And again, everything in this passage is leading to this way of life. Follow me. It is a life that is all-encompassing. It is a life that infects our entire being. It affects everything about us. And again, everything is moving to this life, which is living life entirely for Christ. Now notice in verse 24, he said, if, which immediately implies conditions, if any man, the word any man, so the conditions that are going to be stated are universal. Any man. If any man will come after me, which is the same as following Christ, or the same as discipleship. Again, he's speaking to his disciples about what is involved in genuine discipleship. The fact that he's speaking to his disciples, those who had openly confessed Christ, those who were outwardly living for Christ, and those who were actively engaged in serving Christ, reveals that genuine discipleship goes beyond these things. They were doing these things. They were confessing Christ. They were living for Christ. They were engaged in His service. But the Lord speaks to them about genuine discipleship. So discipleship, though it includes all of those things, yet it is something that goes beyond all of those things. So He speaks here to His disciples. He reveals something. He reveals a way of life that is really foreign to the reasoning of man. And that's true whether it be a lost man or saved man. What Christ is revealing here is foreign to the reasoning of man. It is an opposition to the reasoning of man. So he's speaking to his disciples about some necessary requirements for genuine discipleship. So we want tonight to just look at the steps to genuine discipleship. Again, everything in this passage leads to those final two words of verse 24. Follow me. Now, many messages have been preached from verse 24 concerning the requirements of genuine discipleship, and certainly verse 24 contains some of the requirements of genuine discipleship. But the truth is, as we'll see from this message, that there are necessary steps before you even get to verse 24. There are a lot of things that take place before you even get to the requirements that are mentioned in verse 24. And these are the steps to genuine discipleship. The first thing we notice, and again, everything in this passage, everything that is said, everything that is happening, is leading to those final two words of verse 24, follow me. Step number one, there must be a proper, a life-changing knowledge and perception of Jesus Christ. One will never follow Christ without a proper knowledge and perception of Jesus Christ. They'll never go too far without a knowledge and perception, a proper knowledge and perception of Jesus Christ. Now in verses 13 through 16, we see Christ asked his disciples a question. He asked them a question about the world's perception of him. There in verse 13, whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? Their answer is given in verse 14. And we see there are various opinions concerning Jesus Christ. Some said that he was John the Baptist. Some said he was Elias. Some said he was Jeremiah or one of the prophets. They all speculated about Jesus Christ. They all had an opinion of Jesus Christ. And in all their speculation, whether you say he's John the Baptist, whether you say he's Elias or Jeremiah or one of the prophets, in all their speculation, they make Christ less than what he is. They make Christ less than who he is. Also notice there in verse 14 that none of their speculations, none of their conjectures concerning Christ would have a life-changing, life-altering impact upon them. None of those, so he's John the Baptist. Does that change your life? Not a bit. So he's Elias. So he's Jeremiah or one of the prophets. That does not have a life-altering, life-changing impact upon anyone. Their perception of Christ is all wrong. Then, again, you'll never live the life of verse 24. You'll never even get to verse 24 without a proper knowledge and proper perception. And a proper knowledge and a proper perception is a life-changing knowledge and perception of Jesus Christ. So our thoughts and our knowledge of Christ touch a vital point to discipleship. Christ then asks a second question, knowing that they would not have the same thoughts as the world. In verse 15, he said unto them, but, implying that they're going to have different thoughts than the thoughts of the world. Whom say ye that I am? Peter, acting as the spokesman for the rest, answers in verse 16, thou art the Christ. Thou art the Christ. Thou art the sent one. Thou art the Messiah. He goes on to say, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God, which he's now declaring that Christ is God. Thou art the Messiah. Thou art God. This is a life-changing knowledge. This has a life-changing impact. And the answer manifests, again, notice he says, thou art the Christ. He doesn't say, we've been discussing it, and we think that you might be the Christ. It's not what he said. Thou art the Christ. Thou art Christ, the Son of the living God. He spoke with assurance. The world doesn't speak with assurance. They say, well, he might be John the Baptist. He might be Elias. He might be Jeremiah. He might be one of the prophets. Peter said, speaking for all of them, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." He speaks with assurance concerning the person of Jesus Christ. He speaks with absolute certainty. And he speaks with conviction concerning the person of Jesus Christ. And you can be sure of this. Again, you will never even get to verse 24 unless you have assurance, certainty, and conviction concerning who Jesus Christ is. This is, you don't just wake up in the morning and decide, "I'm going to follow Christ." You can do that, and you might, if you're really good, last a day. But you probably won't even last that long. And this is why people are always faltering. Because this isn't something you just roll out of bed and do. This isn't something that you just make up your mind one day, "I'm going to follow Jesus Christ." No, this is something that results from a life-changing, life-altering impact upon our lives. It is a knowledge and perception of Christ that changes everything about us. So this is where we begin. There is this proper knowledge and proper perception of Jesus Christ. Secondly, there must be a personal realization of grace. Verse 17, "And Jesus answered," this is in response to Peter's reply, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. "And Jesus answered and said unto him, Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven." So Christ's response to Peter was, first of all, that by the grace of God, Peter had been blessed. He said there again in verse 17, "Blessed art thou." Blessed art thou. A personal realization that we are blessed of God is vital concerning genuine discipleship. It is a vital point. You will not follow Christ in a genuine way without the realization, "I am blessed. I am blessed of God." But notice what he says here in verse 17. "Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona." Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona. He is, why did he refer to him as Simon Barjona in the context of being blessed? "Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona." That means the son of Jonas. You are the son of Jonas, and you have been blessed of God. He is reminding Peter of his unworthiness of the blessings of God. And the more you and I realize that we are blessed of God, and the more we realize that we are unworthy of every single blessing of God, the more likely we are to follow Jesus Christ. Christ then reminded Peter the source of the blessing. He says, "For flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee." Revealed what unto him? "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." Flesh and blood has not revealed that unto you, Peter, but my Father which is in heaven. Again, if we're going to live the life of verse 24, there must be a personal realization that we are blessed of God, that we are unworthy of all the blessings of God. Therefore, we are blessed by the amazing grace of God. You'll never even get to verse 24 until you realize the amazing grace of God in your life. Thirdly, in verse 18, there must be a realization of our own insufficiency and of the sufficiency of Jesus Christ. In verse 18, "And I say unto thee that thou art Peter." Thou art Peter. Thou art Petros. Thou art a stone. Thou art a pebble. You are insignificant. He is reminding Peter here of his own insignificance. And then he says, upon this rock, pointing to himself, Petra, rock, a great difference between a rock and a stone, a rock and a pebble. He has reminded Peter of his insignificance. And now he is reminding Peter of the sufficiency that is in Jesus Christ. Notice he drew attention to himself. And upon this rock, Peter's been reminded of his own insignificance, his own insufficiency. And now he's being reminded of the significance and sufficiency of Jesus Christ. So what he's saying to Peter in the hearing of his disciples, Peter, you are insignificant. Peter, you are insufficient. In and of yourself, you are insignificant. In and of yourself, you are insufficient. But I am everything that you need. I am the rock. And one will never truly follow Christ until they realize that He is everything they need. Until they realize that they are not sufficient in themselves, they will not follow Jesus Christ. So he's saying to Peter, in the hearing of all the disciples, I am the foundation. I am the foundation. This is vital to genuine discipleship. If we are going to live the life of verse 24, if we're going to get to follow me, there must be a personal realization. We are insignificant. We are insufficient of ourselves. And Christ is sufficient. And Christ is everything that I need. And He is the foundation upon which I should build my life. You will never follow Christ until you realize those truths. So you see, a lot of people never even get to "if any man will come after me." They never get there because they don't have that life-changing knowledge and perception of Jesus Christ. Because they don't have that personal realization that they have been blessed of God and that they're unworthy of all the blessings of God and that they've been blessed because of the grace of God. And they have not known their own insignificance and their own insufficiency. And they haven't come to the realization that Christ is sufficient and He is everything I need. You have to do those things. Those things have to be real before we get to follow me. Fourthly, verse 18 again, there must be a personal conviction that Christ's work cannot be thwarted. Verse 18, upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Again, everything's moving toward follow me. Christ declared that He would build His church, that it would be built upon the foundation of Himself. And the result of Christ building the church and the result of Christ building it upon Himself is the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Why will not the gates of hell prevail against the Lord's church? Why? Is it because of something in the church?
No, it's because of the builder. It's because of who built it. And it's because of the foundation that it is built upon. So again, this is a vital point concerning genuine discipleship. That is, there must be a personal assurance that Jesus Christ is the foundation and that His work cannot be thwarted. And if you really believe that, if you really believe that Jesus Christ is the foundation, that Jesus and that His work cannot be thwarted, you will not have any problem following Jesus Christ. But you have to get there. You have to have this knowledge. You have to have this conviction, this assurance, because of who Jesus is and because of what He does. His work cannot be thwarted. Fifthly, there must be a feeling of obligation toward the will of God. That's in verse 21. From that time forth began Jesus to show unto His disciples how that He must go into Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised again the third day. From that time forth, this marks a key transition in the text. He now begins the process of showing His disciples. Why did He pick this time to do that? Because everything's leading to follow Me. So He now begins the process of showing His disciples the fact that He would suffer at the hands of men, that He would die, and that He would rise again victoriously. We don't know everything that Jesus told them here, but He began the process talking about how He must die, how He must suffer, how that He would rise again. What's He doing? He is setting forth His example. He is setting forth His example. Again, everything leads to follow Me. Notice, again there in verse 21, how that He must. It's not He wished to do so, but how that He must go into Jerusalem. He must suffer. He must be killed and be raised again the third day. That word must shows His compulsion. It shows the compulsion of His heart. It shows the compulsion of His spirit. It shows His attitude toward the will of God. This also is a vital point to genuine discipleship. This compulsion, this spirit and attitude is the result of everything said so far. You're not going to have this spirit, I must do the will of God. I must do the will of God. If I don't do anything else, I must do the will of God. I have to do the will of God. That has to be our compulsion. That has to be our spirit and our attitude. But we will not have that spirit, we will not have that attitude unless there is a life-changing knowledge and perception of Jesus Christ. You will not have that attitude without this perception of Jesus Christ. You will not have this attitude. You will not feel this compulsion without a personal realization. I have been blessed of God. I am unworthy of the blessings of God, but God in His grace has blessed me. Why, grace alone gives us a compulsion to serve God, to serve Him.
There must be, again, before we have this compulsion, I must do the will of God. We have to realize our insufficiency. And we have to realize the sufficiency of Christ. We have to have a firm persuasion, a strong conviction that Jesus Christ is the foundation. And that His work and everything built upon that foundation cannot be thwarted. Having all of those things, now there is this compulsion. I have to serve God. There has to be that compulsion if we're going to be a genuine disciple of Jesus Christ. If we are going to live the life of verse 24, there has to be this attitude, this spirit. Now, in the context of that, after he said, I must, and what he's saying there is, I must do the will of God. I must do the will of Him that sent me. I must do that. In the context of that, and again, everything that happens here is leading up to, follow me. Christ rebuked an attitude that is detrimental to this compulsion of spirit. The attitude of save thyself, spare thyself. Verse 22, Peter took him and began to rebuke him. Peter couldn't understand. Why? Why must you go and suffer and die? Why? Be it far from thee. In other words, save thyself from such. And then we see, of course, the Lord's response. And any time we have that attitude, save thyself, spare thyself, that's of the devil. That's of Satan. And he says, you are an offense to me. Thou savorest not the things of God. No, at this moment, Peter was savoring the things of self. But if we're going to live the life of verse 24, we must continually overcome this attitude of this shouldn't happen to me. This attitude of save thyself. Christ warned of this again in verse 25. He said, for whosoever will save his life shall lose it. And whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. So there has to be this compulsion. I must do the will of God. I must do the will of God. Sixthly, the will must be engaged to follow Christ. Verse 24. Then said Jesus unto his disciples, those who were outwardly serving him, those who were outwardly confessing, those who were outwardly living for him, if any man will. That is, if any man will desire to come after me. If any man will desire, if any man yearns to come after me. If any man will, it conveys the idea of determination. Resolve. It's our aspiration to follow Christ. You know why some who profess to be saved don't follow Christ? They don't want to. if any man will. If any man will. That speaks of a longing. We have to have this longing to come after Christ. It's a hungering. It's a craving. There's an eagerness. The will is vital concerning genuine discipleship. On the part of ourselves, there must be a single-mindedness. Again, Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, no man can serve two masters. There's no exceptions there. No man can serve two masters. If any man will, follow me or come after me. That single-mindedness, that's firmness of purpose toward Jesus Christ. If any man will come after me, there's a desire. Who has the desire to follow Christ? Who has this overwhelming desire to follow Christ? Is it the one who thinks Christ is John the Baptist? No. It's the one who has a proper knowledge and perception of Jesus Christ. It is the one who has a personal realization that they have been blessed of God by grace. It is one who realizes their own insufficiency and the sufficiency of Jesus Christ. Why, if I realize that I'm insufficient, that without Him I can do nothing, guess what? I'm going to want to follow Him. If any man will, follow me. The one who has this will is the one, again, who has the conviction that Christ is the foundation. And now they feel an obligation and they have a desire to follow Jesus Christ. And this desire, this isn't just a desire that you have every now and then, a thought comes in your mind, you know, I ought to turn my life around and I ought to start following Christ. No, this is far more than that. We've already seen the things that lead up to this. This desire must be stronger than any other desire that we have. It must overcome everything else. It is a desire of priority. It takes priority over all the events of life. In the book of Luke, if we turn there, chapter 9, verses 57 through verse 60. It came to pass as they went in the way, a certain man said unto him, and this is about 8 days after, this is Luke's account of what we're reading in Matthew 16, but this portion of Luke chapter 9 would be about 8 days after, because they've gone to the Mount of Transfiguration. So this certain man comes unto the Lord, and he says, I will follow thee whithersoever thou goest. And Jesus said unto him, foxes have holes, and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man hath not where to lay his head. What Jesus is saying to this man is, think about what you just said. I will follow thee whithersoever thou goest. Jesus says, I want you to consider that. I want you to consider what that means. In another place, he talked about counting the cost. That's what he's telling this man here. Because a man who has put his hand to the plow and turns back is unworthy. He's a disgrace. So Jesus is telling this man, you think about what you said. You know, people can come forward, people can declare to others, I'm going to start following Christ. Well, you think about that. You really give that some serious thought. There's a cost. It'll cost you more, by the way, not to follow Christ. But there is a cost. The Son of Man hath nowhere to lay his head, he reminds him. And he said unto another, follow me. But he said, Lord, suffer me first. He's not unwilling to follow Christ. He's just saying, Lord, I have something else to do right now. Let me do that first. Suffer me first to go and bury my father. His father has passed away. It is time for the funeral. Jesus said, follow me. I can't right now, Lord, but I will. But I know you understand. I've got to go to my father's funeral. And Jesus said, let the dead bury the dead. What he's saying is, any lost person can do that. That's not what you're here for. That's not what you're here for. That's like the individual says, well, I'd serve the Lord, but I work at a hospital and they're open on Sundays. Any lost person can do that. You don't have to do that. And that applies to many, many other things as well. So the events of life. Someone dies. Following Christ, this desire to follow Christ, has priority over all the events of life. He goes on in verse 61, and another said, Lord, I will follow thee, but let me first go bid them farewell. Lord, it's only fair that I go and say goodbye to my loved ones. And Jesus said unto him, no man having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. The truth is, you look back, you're going back, is what Jesus is saying. Children of Israel would have gone back to Egypt because their eye was on Egypt. This, the will must be engaged in following Christ. It is a desire that takes precedence. It is a desire that takes priority over all things. It even takes priority over relationships. Luke chapter 14 and verse 26. Jesus talked about hating your father, your mother, your brother, and sister. What he is saying there is love of Christ and the desire to follow Christ takes priority over all earthly relationships. And you will never be a genuine disciple until you realize that truth. And who is it that realizes that truth? We've already mentioned all of those things. And it begins with a proper knowledge and perception of Jesus Christ. I'll say this. If you put loved ones ahead of the Lord, you do not have a life-changing knowledge and perception of Jesus Christ. A life-changing knowledge and perception of Jesus Christ will have a will to follow Christ, and that desire, nothing gets in the way of that desire. Seventhly, there must be an attraction to Christ. You know why some do not follow Christ even though they profess to be saved? They're not attracted to Him. You know why some struggle with the world and they're always going back and forth? Because they have an attraction to the world. There must be an attraction. There must be something that draws us to Jesus Christ. And again, everything comes back to a proper knowledge and perception of Jesus Christ. Notice Jesus said, verse 24, if any man will come after me. And then the last two words, follow me. So the words after and follow speak of a pursuit. And the word me refers to the object of the pursuit, which is the object of attraction. Whatever it is that we are pursuing, that is what we are attracted to. People pursue all kinds of things. But there must be, if any man will come after me, if any man will follow me, there must be an attraction. to Jesus Christ, he must be considered to be worthy of all. That is, there must be, and again, it all goes back to a proper knowledge and perception of Christ. There must be a proper appreciation of Christ. Well, if we properly appreciate Christ, we're attracted to him. You and I have a real problem if there is not an attraction to Jesus Christ. And I'm talking about an attraction that has a drawing power. It's an enjoyment of Christ. People are attracted to what they enjoy. And the reason some don't follow Christ, they don't enjoy Christ. They don't enjoy Christ. They don't enjoy his teachings. They don't enjoy the lifestyle that he teaches. There must be, our hearts and minds must be obsessed with Christ. And all of this results in us being pulled and drawn toward him. That's why, again, we have to keep eye on our heart and we have to monitor our spiritual health every day. Because as soon as we do not feel a pulling and a drawing to Christ, we're in trouble. And as soon as we begin to feel we're being drawn to the world or drawn to the mindset of the world, you're in trouble. You better stop right where you are. You better stop right there and take care of that thing. You say, well, I'll do it later. You better do it right now. Because the results can be disastrous. You can ruin your life. You can ruin the life of someone else. So as soon as we do not feel that attraction, we do not feel that pull and that drawing, we better get concerned. And there are those who haven't felt that for a long time. Again, this attraction to Christ is a vital point concerning discipleship. Eighthly, there must be a denial of self. If any man will come after me, let him, that is the one who has this desire and attraction to come after Christ, deny himself. Desire and attraction to Christ, though necessary, are not enough. It's not enough. The desire and the attraction must be so great, so powerful, so influential, so dominant, that it causes us to deny ourselves. Deny self. To deny is to oppose. Timothy was to instruct those who oppose themselves in the Lord. And that's not talking about opposing your flesh. That's talking about opposing yourself spiritually. You see, it's a real problem when we don't oppose that which gets in the way of serving Christ, and rather we oppose that which encourages following Christ. We are to deny self. That means we're to refuse self. We're to turn down ourself. Now that goes against the thinking of the world, especially our society. We're to say no to ourself. There are people who can't even say no to their children, let alone themselves. We're to turn down ourselves. To deny is to dismiss. It's to renounce. It's to reject. What is it that we're to oppose? Well, I oppose everything that goes against the Ten Commandments. That's good. But it won't help you a whole lot unless you oppose yourself. Unless you oppose yourself. I refuse anything that does not line up with Jesus Christ. That's good. But you better oppose yourself. You better refuse and turn down yourself, because you'll never follow Christ, as he's talking about here, without denying self. This is more than giving up certain things. Many have been led to believe that they are serving the Lord because they have given up certain things. And no doubt, if we're going to serve the Lord, there is much that needs to be forsaken. There is more to be forsaken than you and I have forsaken. There's no doubt about that. There is much to be forsaken. But Jesus takes us much further. You deny yourself. You can give up all worldly pleasures. But if you do not deny self, you will not follow Jesus Christ. You will not be a genuine disciple of Jesus Christ. Let him deny himself. Jesus consistently stood opposed to the entire self system. That includes self-righteousness. We all have a tendency, by nature, to be self-righteous. We have to renounce that. We have to renounce self-righteousness. We have to deny self-centeredness, self-interest, self-confidence, self-importance, self-indulgence, self-reliance, self-satisfaction, self-seeking, self-sufficiency, because it's self. It is self that gets in the way. It is self that leads to misplaced priorities. If your priorities are misplaced, it's because self has not been denied. It is self that has misplaced concerns. So the denial of self, and again, you back up to everything we've said up to this point, and all of those things are necessary to get to this point of denying self. You're not just going to wake up in the morning and say, you know, starting today I'm going to deny myself. It won't last long. You have to have a life-changing knowledge and perception of Jesus Christ. And then again, all the other things that we mentioned. Ninthly and lastly, there must be the taking up of the cross. And notice, it follows the denial of self. And it's a connecting word. Order is significant here. Deny self and take up. That means you reach forth and you lay hold of his cross. Take up his cross. It does not say, take up thy cross. That's not what it says. It says, take up his cross. This cross is linked to that verb, take. So it's not something that is laid upon us. It is something which we take up. That speaks of that which is voluntary on our part. If I go and I pick up something, it's because I want to. I voluntarily do so. And we are to take up, not the cross, not our cross, but his cross, the cross of Christ that he spoke of, that he must go into Jerusalem, suffer and die. So, I do not believe, as it is often preached, as it is often sung about, that this cross has any reference at all to our difficulties, our trials, our afflictions, our sorrows, our heartaches, any other bad situation in life. How many times people say, well, that's my cross and I have to bear it. That's not what this is talking about. That's not what it's talking about. This is something we take up. It has direct reference to what Jesus began to show his disciples back in verse 21. And speaks of a principle of life. And there must be a denial of self before we can do this. The cross, his cross, is the expression of the world's hatred. In order to be a genuine disciple of Christ, we must be willing to be hated as he was hated. Not just hated, but taking up his cross. Hated as he was hated. Now you will not do that unless you deny yourself. It means that the cross, taking up the cross of Christ, means that we are willing to be ridiculed, mocked, and rejected as he was. I don't like when people make fun of me. Who does? I don't know anybody that enjoys it. But if that prevents you from serving Christ, you haven't denied yourself. Or you have a wrong perception of Christ. But this cross also speaks, it's his cross. It speaks of a surrender. It speaks of a submission to the will of God. It speaks of an obedience that is voluntary and faithful without any reserve. To take up his cross is an obedience without any reserve whatsoever. That requires the denial of self. It requires it. Without any reserve unto death, or without any reserve, even if it means death. That's what it means to take up his cross. Oh, Lord, you know I would die for you. People say that and they won't even live for him. I doubt that you're going to die for him if you won't even live for him. People say they're going to die for him and they can't even stand to be mocked. And this is Peter. Though, Lord, all forsake thee, not I. Oh, you have no idea what you might do. All it takes is a failure to deny self, and we'll turn against Jesus Christ. So this also is a vital point concerning genuine discipleship. All of this leads to a life lived out for him. Verse 24 again. Then said Jesus unto his disciples, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. This is where it all ends. Following Christ. That's a life lived out for him. What does it mean to follow Christ? We already went through that at the beginning of the message. But basically it is a steady, humble walk that follows his footsteps and follows his paths. All people want the spectacular. What we need is a steady, consistent walk following the footsteps of Jesus Christ. And we see everything that is required to do that. And that ought to be our desire. That ought to be the desire of our entire life, to follow Jesus Christ. Whatever happens, follow Jesus Christ. Some days you just don't feel like following Christ. You know what you need to do then? You need to deny yourself. You need to deny yourself. But these are things we cannot let go. These are things that we cannot neglect. These are things that we cannot ignore. If you feel that there's one day that all of a sudden there's just not an attraction to Christ, there's just not a drawing power to Christ, you better take care of that. Well, this is serious. Or you just don't feel like denying yourself. It's about me today. That's very dangerous. I'm going to have a me day. Oh, you don't realize the danger you're in. Well, you know what I mean by that. Well, yeah, I kind of do. It's not a me day. Every day should be about Christ. Following Christ. God help us to be steady followers of Christ. Brother Mark, if you'd come and lead us verse song. Let's all stand.